Vox Quick Hits.
It's Today Explained. I'm Sean Ramosford, and we've talked a bunch on the show about European efforts to regulate big tech, more recently American efforts to regulate big tech, but last week we got an Australian effort to regulate big tech that could end up being hugely influential. The Australian government told Google and Facebook that if they want to feature stories from news outlets on their platforms, they'd have to cough up some cash to the publishers whose work they're featuring. After fighting this legislation tooth and nail, Facebook told the Australian government it would not comply and basically wiped a bunch of Australian news outlets from its site immediately. Scary. But Google signaled it would comply. It worked out a deal to start paying for the news featured on its platforms. Maybe it's because Google sees the writing on the wall. Change is in the air. Tech is gonna get regulated, and they can't fight it forever. Since this very well may be the season of change for big tech, it's worth knowing where and how all these companies got started. Facebook got a movie, but what about Google? The Vox Media Podcast Network has a show to fill the void, the Google movie void. It's called Land of the Giants, and just last week, they launched their latest season all about Google. Today, we're bringing you episode one on the Google Empire. It's the story of how two grad school students turned a search engine idea into maybe the most powerful company in the history of the world. If you want to hear more, you know the drill. Find and subscribe to Land of the Giants wherever you find and subscribe to your podcasts. Here's your host, Shireen Ghaffari.
To understand Google today, we need to know the people and ideas that shaped its beginnings. And one of those people was Terry Winograd.
I mean, I think there was one article that referred to you as like the Yoda of Silicon Valley. And so
I think that was based on looks.
Terry Winograd's being pretty humble here. He's downplaying the fact that he's advised some of the most successful founders in tech history.
What is your secret?
So I have the same secret that the real estate agents always tell you. There's one thing that really makes it work: location, location, location.
That location? Stanford University. Winograd started teaching computer science there in 1973, back when Silicon Valley was practically an apple orchard. He retired in 2012, but early in his tenure, he met one of his most famous mentees.
I actually met Larry when he was 7 years old.
Winograd remembers meeting Larry as a kid when his father, who was a professor, visited Stanford. Both of Larry's parents were accomplished computer science researchers, so it was only natural that he would follow the same path. When Larry got to Stanford, he had a lot of ideas about what to research, though some of those interests sounded more like science fiction.
I remember him coming in talking about space tethers, which had no, you know, wasn't computer science. It wasn't even practical and certainly still isn't, basically. But he was fascinated by the question of, could you get into space through a space tether? And that was just the kind of thinking he did. You know, let's try it.
Soon enough, Larry became friends with a fellow classmate who was game to humor his wild ideas, Sergey Brin. Sergey was also the child of accomplished academics. His parents emigrated to the U.S. from the former Soviet Union when he was six. And like Larry, Sergey grew up going to Montessori schools. And he was a little wacky.
I mostly thought of him as, you know, the guy who works with Larry.
He was kind of a character, it seems like. Like, I read stories about him rollerblading through the halls. And
that's both of them.
Both of them.
Oh, yeah. In spite of the signs up saying no rollerblades allowed in the hallways, you know.
What were they like back then? I mean, they were these bright.
Very bright and sort of cocky. You know, they very self-assured.
When I talk to people who knew Larry and Sergey in their early days, their names mold into one. Larry and Sergey, or sometimes just Larry Sergey. It slips off the tongue. It shows just how connected they were once they started putting their minds together. Even though they were also pretty different. Sergey was the more sociable one. He was naturally outgoing and quick to share his strong opinions on whatever subject he was talking about. Larry was more reserved, but equally confident.
They were decently likable. I mean, especially because we're in a nerd department. But that wasn't what brought it together. It wasn't their human skills. It was really that they were smart and they were willing to try things.
Like navigating the World Wide Web. This was back when the general population was just getting access to the internet. The volume of content online was exploding. Really, the web was as much of an unknown as space.
And trying to find your way around that web in the mid-1990s was not pretty. Your best bet was to use the Yahoo directory, which was literally a human-made list of websites, just like a Cyber Yellow Pages. And if you did try a search engine, well, good luck.
The way I used to describe it is you would type in your search, go get a cup of coffee, and come back and see what it found.
Larry could do better than that. But first, he'd need to see how all the pages on the internet connected, what the network looked like, and how the sites were linked. To do that, you'd just have to download and index everything on the internet. Every single web page. No big deal. This was just the kind of challenge Sergey couldn't resist. Winograd says the pair came to him to pitch their plan.
Basically, I said, no, you can't do all that. And they said, oh, yes, we can. And I said, well, go ahead and try.
So Larry and Sergey started tapping into Stanford servers. And their Map the Web exercise ended up taking down the entire campus network.
Freaking geniuses on rollerblades.
Yeah, but the project was a success. Through that web crawl, Larry and Sergey discovered something. A new, elegant way to sort information online. To get to the genius of Larry and Sergey's big idea, it helps to picture the web like a grand map. Imagine the links that connect to specific pages are like roads. Now, imagine that some of those pages look like cities. They've got many more links leading towards them than the other pages. So those pages, the ones with all the roads heading to them, when those pages link to your page, some of their importance rubs off on you. And you get to be important too. You get to win at search.
This sounds totally intuitive, but it was actually a full paradigm shift for how information had been sorted online. For people searching the web, this made a huge difference, and it changed the power dynamics of the internet. Because it didn't matter who you were. You could be the New York Times or an independent blogger. When important pages linked to your website, you could be someone's number one search result. Larry Sergey translated their idea into an algorithm called PageRank, a play on Larry's last name, Page.
Now they would need a way to put that algorithm into practice, give you a way to use it. And that's Google.
And Google worked really well, maybe too well for a dissertation. After all this effort, Larry Sergey faced a crossroads. They had to decide how to share this new ranking system they'd invented.
I think they were hesitant because they felt that it was, quote, the secret sauce, right? It was the thing that was going to make their search engine better than everybody else's. And if that's the case, you don't put it out there for everybody else to use. On the other hand, they had an academic attitude, and they felt if they did something that was intellectually really interesting, it should be published in the literature.
When I hear this, I have this vision of two angels on Larry Sergey's shoulders. One told them, publish PageRank as an academic paper. And the other whispered, whisk this idea away from Stanford and build this thing into a mega company.
Because this was the mid-1990s, internet startups were the hottest companies on the planet.
But Larry Sergey weren't in it for the internet riches, or so they say.
I will say that when we started Google, we did it out of desperation.
That's Larry Page. He didn't speak to us for this podcast, neither did Sergey. They infamously avoid the press these days. But here he is in 2002, doing an interview at Stanford. An interview in which he reveals that he and Sergey tried to find a way to satisfy both those academic and entrepreneurial instincts.
We actually tried to license Google to other search companies. We talked to them. We wanted to finish our PhDs. And, you know, none of them were interested.
Larry Sergey went to Excite, InfoSeek, two other search engines of the time. They wanted to license their idea, but no one was really compelled by Google. According to Sergey, they didn't mind search being a bit clunky.
And we really didn't believe that was true. We think, you know, search is really important to people. That's how you get information, which is really critical to you. And so we set about creating our own.
Sergey delivered this line on the Charlie Rose show in 2001. What he's saying is that starting Google, the company, wasn't his first choice. It was something he had to do. The part of this story that really strikes me, though, is Larry and Sergey's sense of sacrifice. The way Larry tells it, it feels like leaving their PhDs behind was like leaving home. You can hear it in his voice. He actually lost something when he started Google.
But the two founders would be martyrs for the cause of accessible information. There is some serious hubris in this story.
Right. It sounds like Larry Sergey really believed the world should not, could not, go on without Google. The world's information needed some organizing. And they, Larry and Sergey, were the ones to do it.